When managing property, you can help yourself avoid a lot of problems by creating a well-structured tenant lease. For example, a well-structured tenant lease provides incentives for the timely payment of rent and penalties for late payment. Its provisions should minimize your maintenance cost and maximize your rental income. In some cases, you can derive a 13-month income from a 12-month lease, and I'll talk more about that in a moment. Some tenants will take advantage of you if you let them. To protect yourself and make the management process easier, you must make certain they understand where the lines are drawn by means of a clearly defined lease. If they cross any of those lines, they can expect to receive a penalty. Whether you manage your property yourself or someone else does it for you, the lines as defined by the terms of the lease must be enforced. Once your tenant has moved into the property and acknowledged that everything is satisfactory and in good working condition, consider making your lease require that the tenant maintain the property from that point on. Now, in the real estate forms portfolio you received with your course materials, a sample move-in, move-out form is included. If repairs become necessary to any part of the dwelling, including appliances, the tenant should be responsible for arranging the repair and paying a certain portion of the repair charge. If the tenant is responsible for making repairs, that responsibility is taken away from you or your manager. Note, however, that the tenant must always obtain your approval in advance of any repairs that are needed. Depending on whether tenants occupy an apartment building or a single-family home, they might be responsible, for example, for anywhere between $20 to $100 of a repair cost. This concept is more easily adapted to single-family rental houses and to apartments, but you might want to give it a try with small, multi-unit properties as well. As in every situation regarding real estate rentals, the marketplace is going to determine whether you can or can't do this and to what extent. The income you receive from a rental property comes by way of rents paid by the tenants. That's why it's important to structure the lease so that the tenants are encouraged to pay their rents on time. I'll never forget going to a real estate seminar several years ago where the topic of avoiding rent control was discussed. The instructor said that if the lease was written at an amount higher than you would normally expect for the property, for example, $50 to $100 a month higher, a rent discount could be allowed. That way, if rent control ever did occur, the amount of the discount could be reduced instead of increasing the rent. Clever idea, but I didn't think I'd ever be a part of any rent control problem, so it occurred to me that a plan like this might encourage tenants to pay on time. So I returned home and changed all my leases as they expired to reflect a rent rate of $25 to $50 per month higher than the rent that I was charging. I then offered a discount for payment by the fifth of the month, and the results were amazing. The number of late payments and bad checks went down to practically zero. Not only that, I now had a plan that I could advertise. In fact, all my ads now include the statement, "Special discount for annual lease." When people respond to that ad, my managers are instructed to say that if the person qualifies as a tenant, and of course I wouldn't accept them if they didn't, abides by the terms of the lease, and of course they have to do that also or they'd be asked to leave, and pays the rent on time, the tenant will receive a $50 per month discount off the lease rate. An ad like this probably generates several times greater responses than a more conventionally written ad. Earlier I said that it was possible to derive 13 months' income from a 12-month lease, and here's how. Some properties are rented to occupants on a weekly basis. You'll always find ads appearing in the newspaper for properties available under these terms. Property owners do this not only to accommodate tenants who can only afford to pay rent on a weekly basis, but also to obtain an additional 4 weeks' rental income in a year. It's interesting, but many people who are able to pay $200 a week in rent are not able to pay $800 a month. Very interesting. From a management perspective, weekly rental collections are a nuisance. However, the same income advantage can be obtained by writing the lease in such a way that the tenant pays every 2 weeks. For example, let's say that you're charging a monthly rent of $800 to a tenant. By charging one half of that amount every 2 weeks, $400, the tenant is actually paying the same amount each year as if $200 were paid every week. Rental income for 12 months at $800 per month is $9,600 a year. But look, if $400 were paid every 2 weeks, the tenant is actually paying $10,400 per year, 26 two-week periods multiplied by $400. You receive an extra $800 when the tenant pays every 2 weeks instead of every month. As I mentioned before, to make certain that the rent is received on time, The lease should be written at a $25 to $100 premium over the fair market value rent. Allow a discount of that same amount if the rent is paid, for example by 5 p.m., on the Saturday following the Friday that the rent is due. Surprisingly, many owners of rental properties do not adhere to the simple but powerful management axiom that rent should always come due on the same day of the month, preferably the first. I've purchased many properties, even large apartment buildings, where the previous owners have rents coming in every day of the month. I mean, in one 90-unit apartment building I bought, there were rents due every single day of the month. The owner had unwittingly turned himself into a professional rent collector. That's about all he did. Even if his tenants were perfect, he could still spend all of his time collecting rent. Most of your own personal obligations come due on the first of the month. People expect to pay at this time of the month. So it's a logical extension of these two facts that rent should become due and payable on the first of the month. Let's assume that you have a home or apartment that rents for $900 a month, and a tenant moves in on the 25th day of the month. For the remaining 6 days, the rent would ordinarily be $180. But instead of collecting rent for just the remaining period, collect one full month's rent that covers the tenant's rent obligations until the 25th of the following month. Then on the 25th of the following month, collect $180 for 6 days' occupancy. And on the first day of the month after that, collect a full month's rent. That way, any tenant who moves into my property always pays a full month's rent. If necessary, the rent is prorated the following month. Before a tenant moves into a property I own, he or she is told that the upfront requirement is 1 month's rent, plus an additional security deposit, plus a last month's rent. Now, invariably, the tenant's going to complain that it costs too much money and that he or she just does not have it. My managers are instructed to respond by saying that if the first full month's rent and a security deposit are paid, the owner will finance the last month's rent without interest over a period of 4 months. Beyond that time, 10% interest is going to be charged. Now, almost every tenant elects to pay the last month's rent spread out over 4 months. Remember, if the lease is renewed at a higher rate, don't forget to collect enough money to bring that last month's rent up to the renewal level. A mistake that is frequently made by investment property owners with no management training is to charge the same amount for the security deposit as they charge for the rent. When they do this, tenants look on that security deposit as what? As a last month's rent and will invariably use it as rent. Whether higher or lower, the security deposit should always be a different amount than the monthly rent. When a tenant moves out and the property is left in good condition, normal wear and tear excepted, the security deposit is refunded. Now, in some jurisdictions, depending on the amount of the security deposit or the number of rental units in the property, the landlord might be required to put the security deposit into an interest-bearing account and pay interest to the tenant when the security deposit is refunded, or post a bond if the security deposit income is commingled with the owner's personal funds. As you can see by reading the lease I've included in the Real Estate Forms portfolio, a special carpet cleaning charge of $50 is deducted from the security deposit. If the tenant wants to have the carpet cleaned professionally and pay that charge separately, the entire deposit will be refunded, assuming there's no damage to the property. In a multi-unit building, fewer than 50% of the tenants will fulfill the terms of the lease and be eligible for a refund of all or part of the security deposit. For single-family homes, the percentage is closer to 80%. The security deposit can be an extra source of income in the case of a tenant who doesn't stay until the end of the lease. It'll help cover the vacancy period while the apartment or home is being restored to a rentable condition. The lease should also contain language indicating that failure to fulfill the terms of the lease will result in the forfeiture of the security deposit, as my lease does in the Real Estate Forms portfolio. Many communities in some states have enacted laws regarding the treatment of security deposits. Under such laws, you might be subject to time constraints on giving notice to ex-tenants regarding the disposition of the security deposit. And as I mentioned previously, in many areas, you must pay interest on the deposits or post a bond. It's important that you become familiar with your local laws that govern landlord-tenant relationships.